Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Traffic Fatalities See Spike in February. Roadway, lane departures, and intersection safety among top contributing factors in crashes, TxDOT reports. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Texas Department of Transportation for the Midland-Odessa region announced that the Odessa District fatality numbers are sitting at 11 deaths in the first 12 days of February. TxDOT said, considering that in 2023, the February fatalities were 8 for the entire month, the 2024 fatalities are extremely high. TxDOT spokesperson Marianne Cedillo, in a phone interview, said vehicle fatalities were previously trending downward. We were on a trend downward, she said, but within this month, those numbers are going back up. The TxDOT Odessa District includes 12 counties within the region: Andrews, Crane, Ector, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler. Within the Midland-Odessa area, 3 deaths have occurred over the past few days. In Midland, 2 fatalities occurred after a single vehicle crash in Midland County, and a 10-year-old student was killed in a hit-and-run while walking home from school. In the city of Odessa, a crash involving a motorcycle also ended in a fatal death. Another pedestrian was killed after being struck by a passenger truck. TxDOT advised that within the Midland-Odessa area, top contributing factors of fatal crashes are roadway and lane departure, 40%, intersection safety, 33%, speed-related crashes, 30%. Younger drivers, 24 years old or younger, account for 29% of all fatal or serious injury crashes. To prevent fatal crashes, drivers are advised of the following tips. Match your speed to road conditions, including bad weather and work zones. Allow for more distance to stop when traffic is heavy or roads are slick. Watch for road signs alerting you of reduced speed limits ahead. Always buckle up, drivers and passengers, day and night. Use caution when trying to pass another vehicle. Leave yourself plenty of time to get where you need to go. Always give driving your full attention. While driving, put your phone away, turn it off, or use an app or your phone settings to block texts and calls, or send auto replies to texts. Cedillo advised that making sure the vehicle being driven is in good working order can also help prevent fatal crashes. Be a defensive driver, she said. That is one of the most important things to remember while driving. This article is entitled, City OKs Special Election Date. Application period to run for at-large seat ends March 4th. By Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland City Council approved a May 4th election date for the council member at-large position, left vacant after the sudden passing of Dan Corrales in late January, who held the seat. The Charter of the City of Midland and the Texas Election Code informs standard candidate eligibility requirements that will be used for the May 4th election. Be a citizen of the United States. Be a qualified voter. Be at least 18 years old on the first day of the term to be filled at the election. Have not been declared mentally incapacitated by a final judgment of a court. have not been convicted of a felony from which the person has not been pardoned or otherwise released from the resulting disability, have resided continuously in the state for 12 months and in the city for 6 months, immediately preceding the deadline for filing an application for a place on the ballot. The application period to run for the seat ends on March 4th. Mayor Lori Blong signed the resolution for the election date during Tuesday's meeting, meaning people wanting to apply as a candidate for the position can do so at any time between now and March 4th. The last day to register to vote in the election is April 4th, the city shared. Voters may request early voting by mail through April 23rd. Voters may vote early in person from April 24th through April 26th, and as well as April 29th and 30th. Typically, city council members serve a term of 3 years. In this case, the person elected to fill the at-large seat will serve the remainder of this one term, which ends in January 2025. The winner of the special election will have to run in the City of Midland election in November if he or she wants to serve for a second term. During Tuesday's City Council meeting, District 2 City Councilman John Norman encouraged residents to get involved and stand up for their beliefs. Blong said the City Council discussed delaying the election out of respect for Corrales' passing. However, she said state law requires that the city calls this election within a specific time frame. Polls for the election will be open on May 4th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. City Council members are compensated $25 per month. In a special election, the first pre-election report, the date of a candidate's campaign treasurer appointment, is April 4th, the city shared. The second pre-election report is on April 26th. This article is entitled, YMCA Briefs MDC on Planned Northwest Location, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. As the Midland YMCA continues its capital campaign to fund a new Northwest Midland location, the organization is looking for support from the Midland Development Corporation. Addressing the monthly meeting of the MDC board, Christina Bearden, Midland YMCA Chief Executive Officer, noted that since the organization acquired 24 acres at Avalon and Mockingbird, just shy of $4.9 million has been raised in its capital campaign to establish the new facility. "It's a huge accomplishment to have so much support so early in the campaign," she said. The initial plans are to renovate an existing 10,000-square-foot facility on the property and build a 2,500-square-foot addition so the new YMCA can offer limited programs. Most importantly, Bearden said, it would provide childcare opportunities for working families in the area and open up 100 slots at the YMCA's downtown facility. The YMCA is Midland's largest infant care provider, with 122 children enrolled and 352 on the wait list. Its after-school program has 415 enrolled and 672 on the wait list. "I'm here to tell you about the influence we have," Bearden said. Construction is expected to begin this year with a grand opening next year, according to Bearden. Estimated construction costs are just over $6.5 million. An additional $1.6 million in infrastructure costs is also expected. Of that, $716,066 will fund an extension of a sewer line, and $941,976 to upgrade Avalon and Mockingbird. Both Avalon and Mockingbird were already in the City of Midland's infrastructure plans, Levi Bryand with Landgraf Crutcher and Associates told board members. The YMCA intends to approach the MDC for $1 million in infrastructure improvements. Bryand and Sarah Harris, executive director of the MDC, stressed that both the sewer and road improvements will serve others, not just the new YMCA. This article is entitled Culinary Treasure. From matcha sips to cheese pulls, Kokomo shines with unique flavors. Photos and story by Brandy Montpremier for the Reporter Telegram. Sitting under the cherry blossom tree in the middle of Kokomo, surrounded by Hello Kitty memorabilia, while the smell of corn dogs and matcha filled the air, I couldn't help to notice the irony of my location actually being West Texas, in a strip mall, on a service road, next to the highway, in a town surrounded by pump jacks. The cliché term hidden gem comes to mind, not only because of the unique decor and food options, but also because the GPS had a hard time finding the location, incorrectly assuming that I had arrived while I was still on the loop, instead of directing me to exit onto the frontage road. Kokomo, Korean corn dog, mochi donuts, and boba tea is the only place where you can get Korean corn dogs in the basin, although a second location is expected to open in Odessa later this year. Upon entrance, I was immediately greeted by a friendly brunette teenage boy with trendy shaggy hair. "Welcome to Kokomo," he said. Ever awkward, I responded with, "Thank you." As I paused to take in the scenery, I was comforted by the sight of ordering kiosks. Personally, there was almost nothing better than walking into a place for the first time and realizing the absence of the threat of being looked upon disdainfully as I waffle back and forth through the options before finally deciding on my choices. The menu was simple. They offer three types of corn dogs: classic, which is battered and dipped in breadcrumbs; potato, which has little crispy potatoes embedded in the coating; and the flamin' dog, which is coated in hot Cheeto dust. You can choose to have them filled with cheese, a juicy, thick beef hot dog, or half and half. They also have a variety of teas, milk tea, and boba pearls. For sides, fries and tater tots could be chosen plain or topped with cheese and or bacon, and for dessert, a variety of mochi donuts known for their slightly chewy consistency and interesting shape. Imagine mini donut holes attached to form a bracelet-like circle. Unfortunately, they were out of donuts by the time I was able to detach my toddler from my leg and make it out of the door. But I have enjoyed them in the past and plan on returning here to try them. I decided on a potato dog, half cheese and half dog, for $6.95. I selected the option to add sugar because I tend to enjoy the complement of sweet and savory. I also purchased an order of Cajun fries for $5.50 and a strawberry matcha with an oat milk substitution, totaling $9. For the remainder of the month, Kokomo is offering complimentary upgrades on all of their drinks, so I happily applied the upgrade on the house. I pressed my card against the reader, and my order number flashed on the screen. Lucky number 57. I could see that there were five orders ahead of me. I took a seat on the small teal sofa under the cherry blossom tree for no more than 5 minutes before my name was called. First up was the strawberry matcha. "Brandy." And before I could stand, another teen with blonde tips hurriedly brought my drink to where I was seated. I thanked him as he handed me a beautiful, deeply contrasting concoction. Its hues transitioned from a rich sea green on top to a delicate flushing pink on the bottom. It looked delicious. I broke the seal and sipped from the lower half first. The flavor of strawberry ice cream filled my mouth through the wide opening of the boba straw. Combined with the creaminess of oat milk, I was momentarily mentally transported to my Nickelodeon days by virtue of my childhood obsession with strawberry milk. Lifting the straw to sample the matcha, I was returned to my geriatric millennial glory. The matcha was lightly sweetened and refreshing. The earthy tones cleared my palate, and I was looking forward to trying the rest of my items. I was already standing when my name was called again. I said thank you for the third time and opted to sit next to their garden wall. The packaging was adorable. A little corgi, Kokomo's mascot, was featured on the light green box that held the corn dog. I opened the package. The sugar sparkled, giving the dog a frosted appearance. The box was hot, so I decided to try a Cajun fry to give the corn dog a moment to cool off. The fries were lightly battered, and the snap as I bit into the fry was incredibly satisfying. It was well seasoned and savory, with a hint of cayenne and the tiniest amount of sugar to balance everything out. I set my sights back on the Korean corn dog and took my first bite. The flavor profile and crunch were reminiscent of a funnel cake with powdered sugar. What followed next can only be described as an epic cheese pull. The mozzarella was high quality, slightly salted and stretchy. I devoured the top half. Upon reaching the hot dog, the experience transformed. The hot dog seemed to enhance the fries' flavor, amplifying their taste in the latter half. After a couple of more Cajun fries, I conceded to the reality that I would not be able to finish the entire meal. The amount of fries received could definitely be shared between two people. Kokomo is one of the many new restaurants contributing to the expanding landscape of the culinary community in Midland. Suitable for a night out with friends, a fun dinner with the family, a quick meal before a movie, or axe throwing. It's a unique and welcome addition to the basin. This article is entitled Midland Police Recovers $90,000 in Stolen Property by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland Police Department reported helping in the recovery of around $90,000 worth of stolen property from businesses in North Central Midland. According to a press release from the city, detectives with the Midland Police were conducting investigations related to a rash of burglaries where several local businesses were victimized. During the investigation, detectives developed probable cause to apply for a search warrant for a suspect's property. The Midland Police SWAT team assisted detectives in serving the search warrant. During the search of the property, in the 4300 block of West County Road 118, detectives recovered the stolen property taken from five stores around the Midkiff Road and Wadley Avenue locations. The stores included Midland Athletic Company, Insure All of West Texas, Shape Me Beauty Studio, and Tall City Sneakers. The recovered property included electric bicycles, shoes, and Garmin devices. The investigation remains ongoing. This article is entitled Single Vehicle Crash Involving Semi Leaves Large Gas Spill by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Odessa police responded to a single vehicle crash involving a semi that had a large gas spill Monday evening. According to police reports, lanes of traffic were shut down at South Grandview Avenue and I-20 eastbound traffic. A sand truck was called for a cleanup of the gas spill while officers shut down traffic from near Grandview Avenue to I-20 near John Ben Shepherd Parkway. The Texas Department of Transportation was also notified of the spill. Odessa police were at the scene for several hours until the cleanup was completed. This is the Life Tributes column. Christy Calhoun, December 15, 1965 to February 9, 2024. Midland. Christy Ray Calhoun, 58, of Midland, passed away February 9th at her home, surrounded by her sisters. She was born on December 15, 1965, and raised in Midland. the youngest of three daughters born to Dolly Jean Nee Williamson and Carl Rayford Calhoun. Christy grew up in rural Midland. Christy is preceded in death by her mother, Dolly Calhoun, and her husband, Billy LeHue. She is survived by her companion, James Hicks, stepson, Clay Brandy LeHue, and their children, Daxton and Lennox, her father, Rayford Calhoun, her two sisters, Vicky Sachs and Rainey Walker, as well as multiple nieces and nephews. Memorial services honoring Christy's life will be at 2 p.m. on Thursday, February 15th at First Methodist Church. Reception will immediately follow the service at the church. Her service will also be live-streamed on the First Methodist Church YouTube channel. In lieu of flowers, please consider memorials to Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, Attention Benevolence Fund, 105 North G Street in Midland, 79701, or donate to the First Methodist Church of Midland. Johnny Wayne Molloy, April 26, 1932 to February 10, 2024. Johnny Wayne Molloy, 91, passed away in Midland on Saturday, February 10th. Johnny was heartbroken when the love of his life, Jane, passed away 13 months ago, and although he will be missed dearly, it is comforting that they are reunited in heaven forever. Johnny was born on April 26, 1932 in Lubbock, the firstborn to William Doyle and Essie Palmer Molloy. He married Jane Ellis on May 18, 1957 at the First Baptist Church of Dublin, Texas. Johnny is preceded in death by his wife of 65 years, Jane Molloy. Also preceding him are his mother and father, William Doyle and Essie Palmer Molloy, his daughter-in-law, Paula Jo Molloy, his sister, Judy Sanders, and husband, Wilson, as well as his nephew, Johnny Mark Sanders. Johnny is survived by his sons, Craig Molloy and wife Bonnie, and Gary Molloy and wife Melissa. He is also survived by 7 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held Thursday, February 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Private burial will be Friday, February 16th at 11 a.m., with memorial service to follow at Crestview Baptist Church at 1 p.m. The family is hosting a reception at the Petroleum Club of Midland after the service from 2 to 4 p.m. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Monsignor James P. Bridges, August 15, 1929 to February 8, 2024. Monsignor James Bridges of Midland passed away on Thursday, February 8th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 15th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February 16th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Monsignor James Bridges and his twin sister were born in Plainview, Texas, August 15, 1929, and raised in La Mesa by his grandparents in the Baptist Church. He converted to Catholicism and entered the seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He was ordained on May 26, 1962, having earned 2 master's degrees in religious studies and education. In 1979, he started a new parish in Midland, named St. Stephen's. Since many in Midland were opposed to a new parish, St. Stephen's was put on hold, and the bishop assigned him to St. Mary's in Odessa, with permission to build a new parish in Odessa named St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. With St. Elizabeth Ann Seton stabilized and growing, Father Bridges returned to Midland to continue the work of developing St. Stephen's, which became the largest parish in the diocese. Believing in his lifelong theme that if you take care of the poor, God will take care of you, he founded St. Vincent de Paul in Abilene, along with Catholic Charities of West Texas and the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa. He also founded Helping Hands in Midland, which provides $2 million in direct aid to the poor. He is survived by his adopted son, Mimo Hernandez, of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. John Vaughan Edmondson, June 15, 1969 to February 9, 2024. John Vaughan Edmondson was born on June 15, 1969 in Midland. He was a beloved husband, father, grandfather, and friend. He passed away on February 9, 2024 in Heath, Texas. Vaughan is survived by his wonderful wife Lynn, his son Colton, as well as his stepchildren, Chad LeHue and wife Natati and Josh LeHue, as well as grandchildren L. Ainsley and Bodie. His mother Barbara and sister Jonah Lynn Zug and husband Donnie. He is preceded in death by his father, John Thomas Edmondson. A visitation service will be held 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., followed by a graveside service on Thursday, February 15th at Rest Haven Funeral Home in Rockwall, Texas. Rosie Lee Briscoe. Rosie Lee Briscoe, age 90, of Midland, passed away Friday, February 9th. Rosie was born in Haskell, Texas. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday, February 15th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Friday, February 16th at 2 p.m. at Homeline Baptist Church, 3500 Annetta Drive. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Minerva Moreno. Minerva Moreno, age 43, went to be with the Lord February 9th. A visitation will be held Friday, February 16th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Cremation services have been arranged to follow. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at asanchez.tfh.com. Christopher Holmquist. Christopher Holmquist, 74, of Midland, passed away February 12th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, February 16th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Corinne Kim Freeman. Corinne Kim Freeman, 71, of Midland, passed away February 11th. There will not be a service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. This is the Dear Abby column. Mother can't understand why son has walked away. Dear Abby, I've always been close to my children. But now that they are adults, it seems like I'm losing my connection with one of them. He married a girl of a different race, and while that doesn't bother me, I have a strong hunch she's the reason he has distanced himself not only from me, but also the rest of the family. When I recently shared with him that I felt his wife is a bit of a busybody and had overstepped some boundaries, he told me he no longer wants a relationship with me. I don't think I said anything so bad that he'd totally remove himself from my or our lives, but I'm no longer going to try to force him to be part of this family. After I blocked his wife from social media, because she doesn't interact, but stalks and then reports back to him, he has blocked me. I'm usually good at dealing with conflict, but he's steadily drawing further and further away. I love all my children, but he needs to realize it's not all about his wife. We're his family, too. I really need help with this one. Signed, Adult's Mom. Dear Adult's Mom, leaving your daughter-in-law and her race out of this for a moment. The situation you have described is one that sometimes happens when a son gets married. When that happens, the young man's allegiance switches from mom and family to his wife. Your daughter-in-law reviewing your posts and discussing them with your son isn't outrageous, particularly if he isn't viewing them himself. Were you posting something she found hurtful or offensive? If the answer is no, you may have to accept that, for whatever reason, your son has decided to move in a different direction. If the answer is yes, offer an apology and see if it's possible to bury the hatchet. Dear Abby, my husband of 30 years and I are in-house separated. We sleep in separate bedrooms. I want a divorce, but he refuses to leave, even though he could afford another house. Our grown son came to visit recently and was staying in our camper in our backyard. The camper is next to our swimming pool. Last Sunday, I looked out the kitchen window and saw my husband standing in the pool naked. Our son was in the camper at the time and came out to see his father standing there. When I asked my husband why he did this, my question was met with rage and yelling that he didn't want to get his bathing suit wet. Don't you think this is the behavior of a depraved person? Signed, Finished in Florida. Dear Finished, for your son to have seen his father naked in the swimming pool isn't what is cause for concern. More alarming is that a change in his usual behavior may indicate a mental or emotional problem and calls for a medical evaluation. He might be more open to it if your son suggests it. Please consult an attorney and ask what would be involved if you were to go through with this divorce. Get those answers now before a crisis happens. Dear readers, on this day that celebrates love, I want you to know how much I value the relationship I have with you. Wishing all of you a happy Valentine's Day. With love, Abby. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for February 14th, 2024. ECISD tapped for high impact tutoring research. OA News at OAOA.com. The National Student Support Accelerator is working with Stanford University to see how well artificial intelligence works with high-dose tutoring. Ector County ISD is the guinea pig for the project. The purpose of the National Student Support Accelerator is to provide wider access to high-impact tutoring and other resources that will help students accelerate through their learning journeys, Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction Lilia Nanez said. ECISD has been using AIR tutors and FEV tutors for about 3 years. It began after the effects of COVID on student learning were revealed. About 3,000 students are currently being provided with high-dose tutoring. FEV is now trying out an artificial intelligence feature that gives tutors different options on how to respond to student difficulties. This research actually started out at Brown University, and then that researcher transferred from Brown University to Stanford. It's pretty exciting to work with this group of individuals, Nanez said. They decided to partner up with FEV, who is our multi-year partner, one of the two big ones that we use for high-impact tutoring. What the AI Tutor Co-Pilot is that the Stanford University group of researchers, they've been working on what they call a large language model. What this large language model does is it collects the words, the conceptual understanding, that in this case, mathematicians are adding to this language that collects the samples of language. Math teachers and math experts put in language concepts, explanations of concepts into this large language model that is then producing questions that the tutors can use to help students understand their mistakes. So that's what AI does, Nanez said. The technology has algorithms that take all the language that has been inputted into this computer system, and then it generates all these ways to respond. It happens in real time, so our kids will not know that their tutor is being assisted by an AI, she added. With FEV, there is a chat feature that offers different ways for the tutors to respond. If the tutor doesn't like what AI comes up with, then they can click a button and then it will generate another question. This is really helping the tutors provide more explicit feedback to the students, whether it be through questions, explaining the concept, or just correcting the mistake. That's exciting about ECISD working with FEV and the Stanford group is that we're the only school district in the nation that Stanford is engaging with in this research, Nanez said. I love the reason why Stanford created this PowerPoint that we've been identified as a top-performing high-impact tutoring district nationally. That's why they wanted to make sure that FEV and the ECISD was involved in this research because our implementation of high-impact tutoring has been proven to be very successful, Nanez said. The researchers actually have two questions. How do the tutors use the AI Tutor Copilot, and how does the AI Tutor Copilot affect student engagement and academic growth? We will have the results of all this when we take our final spring MAP Measures of Academic Progress assessment. We have a randomized control group, Nanez said. One group of students has live tutors and one has the Copilot. The control group just has the live tutors as they've been working with us for the last 2.5 years. The treatment group is the one that has the tutors that are leveraging the AI Copilot, she added. With the randomized control trial, they are randomly assigning tutors to use the artificial intelligence. We don't have control over it. They're not making any decisions like this tutor has been tutoring for 3 years. We know they've got a proven track record. They've just randomly assigned tutors to use this AI, and it's supposed to make the tutors more effective, Nanez said. The high-dose tutoring has been funded by Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief, or ESSER, funds that will go away after this year. We're all very concerned about that, especially since we have not received any additional funding from the state since 2019. We know that our high-impact tutoring has worked, and it has been a part of our strategic plan, Nanez said. We are revamping our strategic plan. We're going to have a new one for the start of the academic year, but the Strategic Plan Project Management Oversight Committee has determined that tutoring has to continue because this is something that has been proven to be successful, and it has been a key part of how we have helped our students close the academic gaps. We're going to continue tutoring. It probably will not be at the scale that we're doing it now because of ESSER, but we will carefully identify the kids that we know will benefit and will continue this, Nanez said. She noted that it is hard to find enough human tutors to go around. When high-dose tutoring began, it was perfect timing because ECISD was short of teaching staff and teachers were overwhelmed by larger classes and the academic gaps COVID caused. We wanted our teachers to focus on Tier 1 instruction, on just implementing and providing quality instruction during the school day. This virtual high-impact tutoring removed that heavy lift from what our classroom teachers were having to do, because not only do they have to analyze data, figure out what the student gaps are, plan for the day, and then plan for additional hour at the end of the day when everyone is exhausted. We have built our tutoring with an academic year and within our instructional frameworks for reading and math, so when it's done correctly, it's done during the day, Nanez said. The tutoring has helped bring ECISD closer to state scores in reading and math, and they have seen growth. We're growing faster than the state is, so we anticipate in a year or two that we will be exceeding the state average, but still you want to keep going with it because you don't want to lose that momentum, Nanez said. House Bill 1416 included requirements for accelerated learning. That's really our framework for providing the virtual high-impact tutoring for kids. That's why we've had it at such a large scale, because of House Bill 1416, and because we're in the middle of the biennium. That House Bill will still be in effect in school year 24-25, but the ESSER funding is gone, so it leaves us in a very difficult position. If the House Bill requires kids who do not hit the certain expectations on STAR, but we don't have the funding, how are we going to do this? So we all agreed that we will continue high-impact tutoring. The question is, how many kids will we be able to afford to do this for? Nanez said. Odessa Christian students taking to the soil. OA News at OAOA.com. throwing in some biblical principles, Permian Basin Master Gardener Kenny Dragoo is teaching students at Odessa Christian School about all things green, growing, and edible. The horticulture class was added to the school's electives as part of the middle school science taught by Deborah Johnson. Things geared up in the fall semester when Master Gardener Nancy Halfacre talked to the students about flowers and Dragoo talked about gardening. Johnson provided instruction on their sciences. The last day before Christmas break, plans were to bring in some seeds and have the students choose what they wanted to plant, Johnson said. About the same time, Dragoo had said it would be nice to have a horticulture class. Johnson said there had been a conversation about an after-school club because the interest was huge. I've got 10 students and I've probably got 40 more wanting to be in here, Dragoo said. Other students are being exposed to it through science classes, Johnson said. Dragoo said he is bringing in people to help beautify the atrium, the flower beds around the sign, and have a garden in the back. Probably this year, it will be mostly container gardening, Dragoo said. Sometime in mid to late April, he added that he's hoping to have a plant sale as a fundraiser. Almost every one of them have said they wanted to come up and volunteer their time to work in the garden, so I'm going to be up here during the summer. We're going to harvest everything we can there and have a vegetable market for another fundraiser for the school. That's my plan, Dragoo said. While school is going on, they plan to make the harvest to the cafeteria. They plan to take the harvest to the cafeteria and let the students sample the vegetables. That way we know they're getting nourished. Good, fresh, nourishing food, Dragoo said. He added that he highly recommends everybody to get into a gardening class. In Andrews, I've got the Junior Master's Gardener Program. I started it up last year, and we're doing it again this year. I've got adult gardening classes going on everywhere. I wish I could start up a 4-H Junior Master Gardener program over here, but I can't. I can only do one county at a time, Dragoo said. He said he might be able to talk Halfacre into offering a Junior Master Gardener course. Johnson said a lot of students were gardening at home. I had no idea that the children were so into it, she added. The plants they took home, whether they grew or not, they'd been writing about it, and everyone said how exciting it was for it to come up. When they didn't make it, it was sad, but they really invested into those little seeds, and they were so excited. Some people have been telling me they are 2 and 3 feet tall, she added. Along a window in the classroom, there are starter plants, Dragoo said. They will be transplanted. That's what they wanted to grow. I've got some different vegetables over there, some flowers, and a few herbs. They've started them all from seeds and a few herbs. Matter of fact, I've purchased enough seed trays to do over 6,000 potential plants, Dragoo said. I'm hoping to have a huge plant sale, and whatever doesn't sell in the plant sale, I'll bring back in here. We're going to plant it in the garden. I've got over 500 cattle buckets donated to me. I'm going to be bringing some of those up here, and that's what we're going to use for our garden for this year. I've got to figure out where the watering system is out there. I've got to send in some soil samples there so I know what amendments I need to do out there because the soil out there is horrible. It's just sand, he added. Dragoo said he plans to put some vegetables, herbs, and flowers in the atrium, which also has turtles and other animals. They are bringing in horticulturist Debbie Frost to help design a revamped atrium. Students in Dragoo's class say they got involved because they were interested in plants, although one student said it sounded better than other electives. Noah Morris, an eighth grader, said he liked the idea of being able to be involved with plants because it's cool. Eighth grader Shane McKinney said he enjoys the class because he gets to do hands-on stuff instead of sitting in the back and reading and answering questions. Morris said he is looking forward to growing watermelons. All of the students noticed that the fresh fruits and vegetables taste better than those from the store. Being able to garden boosts classroom engagement as well. It boosts your wanting to be here, actually looking forward to the class, Morris said. The class also connects the Bible to gardening. It's crazy when you actually start looking at it, how everything is kind of related in some way, McKinney said. The students said Dragoo is one of their favorite teachers. It's not about me, it's about the kids. They need to learn this as much as anybody needs to learn it. God has given me the ability to do it and the time to do it, he added. Permian Basin Master Gardener Kenny Dragoo poses for a photo in the atrium at Odessa Christian School. He is teaching middle school students about horticulture, its importance, and how it ties in with the Bible. Ruth Campbell, Odessa American. UTPB becomes official Special Olympics College. OA News at OAOA.com. University of Texas Permian Basin has become an official Special Olympics College program, and a Special Olympics student organization has been created. A community kickoff is set for February 17th. Vice President of Community Engagement and Partnerships, Jackie Gore, said, "We want to encourage Special Olympics athletes from across the Permian Basin to join us that day. We will have 5-on-5 basketball games during the halftime of the UT Permian Basin women's and men's basketball games. Following the men's basketball game, the UT Permian Basin basketball players will host a basketball clinic for Special Olympics athletes that will start around 5 p.m., Gore said. Following the clinic and the game, UTPB will host a Special Olympics dance with a 1950s sock hop theme. Many of these athletes will be coming in from the surrounding area. We're going to make a really fun day of this. All of this is in coordination with Special Olympics Texas. They are the source to get the information out to the teams that are already registered through Special Olympics," Gore said. "This is a great time for the families with maybe a special needs individual who wants to get involved. This would be a great time to come and learn more about the opportunities available in Special Olympics. We want to encourage community volunteers to join us. This is a great time if you would like to get involved as a volunteer with Special Olympics. Join us that day and we can share the information about those opportunities available to you. This is all an effort to expand the opportunities for Special Olympics athletes in the Permian Basin, because we know there are many more individuals who could participate who haven't had the opportunity for whatever reason," she added. Gore added that Special Olympics offers different competitions locally on a regular basis. There is a basketball tournament coming up in March. Events can be found at tinyurl.com/BDTZ6BZ6. Special Olympics was the first project Gore worked on when she joined UTPB in September 2023. The student organization is currently waiting to be officially accepted into being initialed as a student organization with the UTPB Student Life Department. However, they already have a strong backing of students who are eager to join once they are solidified as a student organization. "We have seen a lot of involvement from the sports teams in helping getting this movement going in the Permian Basin. We currently have 4 officers. The officers consist of myself, Zach Levesque, as president, Cassie Rother as our vice president, Tamia Flores as our secretary, and Grace Federn as treasurer," Levesque wrote. IDEA UConn to host its student lottery for the 2024-25 school year. OA News at OAOA.com. IDEA Public Schools will host its student lottery for the 2024-25 school year, February 17th. During the lottery, IDEA will announce the names of students randomly selected for seats at IDEA UConn for the 2024-25 school year. "We are thrilled to welcome new and existing IDEA families into our school community and honored to provide a Topier education option for all students," Bethany Solis, Executive Director of IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin, said in a news release. "We look forward to the opportunity to inspire, nurture, and support our scholars to and through college." IDEA UConn currently serves more than 1,000 students. Next year, IDEA UConn will add high school to the campus for the first time, serving students in grades K through 9. For the past 17 years, IDEA has achieved nearly 100% college acceptance among seniors while maintaining a college graduation rate 5 times the national average for students for low-income communities, the release said. During the lottery process, names are selected at random by grade, with spots offered in the order of selection. When the capacity is reached for each grade level, the remaining applications will be assigned a position on a waiting list in a randomized order. Once the lottery is complete, parents or guardians will receive a notification according to their preferred method of contact, email, and/or text message. Only applications completed before the deadline of February 16th at 11:59 p.m. will be eligible for the lottery. Applications submitted after the lottery deadline are only granted seats if space is available or applicants will be added to the wait list in order of the date and time of their application. Families can now apply at www.ideapublicschools.org/apply. IDEA Travis and Midland participates in Midland ISD's Apply Midland application and lottery process, which can be found at midlandisd.net/apply. Americans Veterans Need to Enroll in Medicare the Right Way, by Tony King. Dear Tony, my husband Jason is a Vietnam veteran and never enrolled in Medicare Part B. because he uses the VA for his medical care. He is 77 years old and retired when he turned 65 about 12 years ago. He is having heart issues and wants to go to a local cardiologist that his best friend uses and must now enroll in Medicare for that to happen. Social Security advised Jason that he must pay more to enroll in Medicare Part B because he never enrolled when he turned 65 in 2011. After reading your Medicare articles in our local newspaper, we need your guidance. Is there a way that he can take Part B without having to pay the extra penalty? Thank you, Christina from Tampa, Florida. Hello, Christina. Since Jason did not enroll in Medicare when he first turned 65 and no longer working with the True Employer Benefits, the key words are, is still working. Jason will get the famous Part D late enrollment penalty when he enrolls in Medicare Part B during Medicare's general enrollment period from January 1st to March 31st. Now is the time for Jason to enroll in both parts of Medicare, Part A and Part B. He did not enroll in Part B when he was first eligible in 2011, and his late enrollment penalty is 10% for each full 12-month period that he could have had Part B but did not sign up for it. His penalty will be for 12 full years, 12-month periods, or an extra 120% each month for the rest of his Medicare life. For 2024, Jason's Medicare Part B penalty will be 120% times $174.70, or an extra $209.60, plus the Part B premium of $174.70, which totals $384.30 per month. No one ever knows what they will need to receive health care outside of a VA center. Chapter 1 of the Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains the rules of enrolling in Medicare the right way, especially those with veteran benefits. Christina, now you understand the value of enrolling in Medicare when one is turning 65, whether he, she is a veteran who chooses the VA or someone who only has Medicare and will need Medicare insurance. Since Jason will be enrolled in Medicare Parts A and B for the first time, the Medicare enrollment rules apply. Medicare Supplement, which has a six-month open enrollment period that begins the first month enrolled in Part B, when the Medicare enrollee will not have to answer health questions for underwriting. After 6 months, complete underwriting will happen. Medicare Advantage Plan, with or without Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage, on page 71 of the 2024 Medicare and You Handbook states, your coverage starts the first day of the month after you sign up. You must have both Part A and Part B to join Medicare Advantage Plan. VMA plans have extra benefits for Americans veterans. Not enrolling in Part D Medicare prescription drug plan has a good ending for Jason. Medicare considers the VA as credible coverage, and when veterans with VA benefits enroll in Part D later, they do not get the Medicare Part D late enrollment penalty. There is no Part D donut hole when receiving prescriptions from the VA and not enrolled in a Medicare Part D plan. Good news! Jason can remain with the VA if the premium is too expensive. He can explore his options for non-VA medical care by contacting his local VA and ask for referrals outside his local VA. Special note to veterans, Scott DeLuzio's Drive On podcast on at driveonpodcast.com, which is a resource for veterans. His podcast with Tony will air in March. Email your Medicare questions to info@tonysays.com or call 832-519-8664. Monsignor James P. Bridges of Midland passed away on Thursday, February 8, 2024. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 15, 2024, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, February 16, 2024, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Bill Lee Quillen, San Angelo, 84, passed away on February 12, 2024. In lieu of flowers, please send memorials to PAWS, P.O. Box 2604, San Angelo, Texas, 76902, West Texas Rehab Center, or the charity of your choice. A visitation will be held on Friday, February 16th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Harper Funeral Home. A memorial service will be held Saturday, February 17th, 2024, at 2 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church of San Angelo. Family and friends can give online condolences at www.harper-funeral.com. funeralhome.com. Albert Richard Britz, 71, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, January 9, 2024. The family will be having a private memorial service. Arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Charles Royce Shepherd, 88, of Crane, Texas, passed away on February 8, 2024 in Abilene. Visitation was on Monday, February 12, 2024 at Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Funeral services were Tuesday, February 13, 2024 at 2 p.m. at the First Baptist Church of Crane, and Reverend Tommy Parker and Reverend Chris Farrell officiating. Burial followed in the Crane County Cemetery. Ray Thomas Pace, Netherlands, Lieutenant Colonel Ray T. Pace, USMC, died on February 11, 2024. In Nederland, Texas. The viewing will be held on Friday, February 16, 2024, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens at 6801 East Business 20, Odessa, Texas. The funeral will be held on Saturday, February 17, 2024, at 3 p.m. at Connection Christian Church at 4241 Tanglewood Lane, Odessa, Texas. There will be a graveside service immediately following. Kinley Tesna Renee White, age 17, of Lubbock, Texas, lost her battle with osteosarcoma on January 27, 2024. The family would like to thank everyone around the country who have included Kinley and all of our family in your prayers.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.